Welcome to Season 4 of E-Commerce Fastlane. This podcast helps resilient entrepreneurs thrive with Shopify. And now, on to Episode 163.
You're listening to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company. Powered by Shopify. Listen to real conversations with partners and subject matter experts as they share proven practical strategies, platforms, and the best Shopify apps to help you accelerate your business. The time is now for you to improve efficiencies, grow revenue, profit, and lifetime customer loyalty. Please welcome your host, startup founder, and strategic advisor, Steve Hutt.
Today's episode is brought to you by our good friends at Vicely. Do you want to maximize the value of each visit to your store, both for the business and for the site visitor? Of course you do. Then look no further than Vicely, a flexible personalization and search solution for your Shopify business. Hundreds of Shopify merchants at every stage of their business lifecycle trust Vicely, from businesses that are just starting out to established brands with nine figures in annual sales. With Vicely, you will build a tailored user experience by adding personalized product touchpoints at every stage of the visitor journey on your Shopify store. Vicely's enterprise-grade tools like one-on-one, real-time personalization, A/B testing, predictive search, dynamic filters, and merchandising will ensure that your store visitors see the right products at the right time, which will boost critical metrics such as average order value and conversion rate. With Vicely's post-purchase and email recommendations, you will also drive repeat visits and sales by turning one-time buyers into repeat customers, which increases your lifetime value and your brand loyalty all in the same process. You can also get access to Vicely's best-in-class white glove support and customization services. Use their pre-built and custom widgets, search results, collection filters, and pages. Everything works together as far as building your brand experience perfectly. And all of this with blazingly fast response times too. So don't leave revenue on the table and don't waste the opportunity to convert visitors into loyal customers. Start today and find out how much Vicely will benefit your Shopify business. Head on over to Vicely.io or search for Vicely in the Shopify App Store to begin your 14-day free trial. No credit card required. Well, hey there, it's Steve, and welcome back to the E-Commerce Fastlane podcast. Now, if this is your first time listening, this is an e-commerce show where we have honest and transparent conversations about building and thriving with your store powered by Shopify or Shopify Plus. If you're an ambitious, lifelong learner, you're definitely in the right place today. New episodes are available twice weekly with your favorite podcast player like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and many more. You can also stream current episodes, including a very relevant back catalog, directly from ecommercefastlane.com. Now, in today's episode, I'm really excited. I actually have two guests. It's very rare. I usually only have one guest, but I have two, and there's reasons why I have two. And they're from a company called Mute6, and they're a Shopify Plus agency partner. So they're like the real deal. They actually get all parts of the marketing funnel, and they do a tremendous amount of services. They've helped a huge amount of direct-to-consumer brands that are on Shopify. And so these are subject matter experts. Today, we're digging really deep into what's going on with Facebook as of late. They're a leading partner and it's true performance marketing, I guess I would say. And they do everything from creative, targeted media buying, they data, first-party data, third-party, they do it all. So it's really exciting to have them all together. The two people are Josh, who is the VP of paid social, and also Moody, who is the Chief Strategy Officer for Mute6. So hello, everyone.
Hey, glad to be here.
Hey, Steve. Yeah, very happy to be here.
So let's talk to Moody first. Like on a high level, like I don't want to butcher it because you do a lot of really great work, but like In essence, like what does Mute6 do and what sort of problems are you solving for a lot of Shopify brands today?
Yeah, so we're a performance marketing agency. We've been around for about 8 years now. We have about 400 Shopify brands under management, which we run paid media for. That could be any of the paid media digital channels. Social happens to be the hero still for a lot of these up and coming brands. but we also do Google, YouTube, the other social platforms. We do email, text message marketing. And then we also do things in the programmatic realm, which is like connected TV, podcasts. Basically, we never wanted to reach a limit in terms of how far we can take all the brands that work with us, right? We really want to be responsible for their growth. So we manage all the channels. Creative happens to be how we positioned ourselves really early on, doing creative work, you know, across all of these channels as early as 6 years ago. You know, we can dive into that in a bit. But yeah, so between that, working on the website, optimizing with landing pages, CRO work, all of that, we touch it all. And ultimately, we've got a lot of success. There's a lot of brands that we work with that, you know, really, really get a chance to scale. I believe I saw the numbers recently, but essentially, you know, for the average brand that stays with us for 6 months or more, 300% increase in growth in terms of revenue. We've got a lot of stories of a lot of hockey stick type growth. That's what we're about. We want to be on the cutting edge of growth for D2C brands. And I'm happy that we're here to chat about all of the latest and greatest in terms of Facebook, but also more.
Beautiful. I know you also, from what I understand, you were listed in quite a few different places. I think Ad Age, and I think you're in Inc. magazine. I don't know. Do you have any details? And even LA had their own awards recently.
Yeah. We won some creative awards on some work that we did. We never even knew how to apply for these awards. We just got started. We're just like, we just want the money, you know, like, let's figure out how to scale. But no, we're excited to say that we won about 4 or 5 awards from a couple of the different sort of creative. I actually am not too familiar with the exact awards, but yeah, we happened to do that. We were also in the press recently because we sold our company to iProspect, which is underneath the Dentsu umbrella. It's actually been a couple of years now, but it's really nice to have like reinforcements from agencies that have been around for so long. You know, I could safely say that we've gotten some really cool things out of the partnership, especially on like just having bigger partnerships with the places that we're buying, right? So like on programmatic, we get to get like literally like the best rates by Google and like some of the other platforms that we buy media.
Yeah, I know the acquisitions. I did read about it, and it's so interesting. The Dentsu company and just iProspect and just the greater scope that they have. I thought it was quite interesting. And is there anything else that you can share about why you believe that acquisition actually happened? Because Mute6 was doing its thing going along, but then when iProspect came in and kind of picked it up, it grew the organization to be much larger and have more depth. I'm just curious, is kind of like, what has that meant for you and the team overall when you get acquired? I know this is a year and a half ago or more, but like, what has happened since acquisition? Is it changing your product mix? Is there a mindset change? Are you just better at what you do? I'm just curious.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think we're a pretty young company in a young sort of industry that's up and coming. So, you know, I think Dentsu's really recognized that we're in a really, really fast moving industry, and they wanted to have, you know, experts who really could navigate that field. I think especially the bigger brands that they work for, right, like the Fortune 500 companies are all eyeing like D2C as like, you know, slowly taking their market share. So, you know, I think that now Dentsu is really excited to be able to offer our types of services to the, you know, so there's like a lot of incubators within those big Fortune 500 brands that are coming out, and we get to help them as well, which is a lot of fun, right? So they're not a company that's going to come in and change anything around. Like if things are going great as they have been, they're going to sit back and watch and let us do what we need to do. And that's all that's happened is they've given us support in ways where we can get bigger connections, and then also just provided more lead flow for those big Fortune 500 companies that are producing smaller brands.
Just going to add to that, Steve. Yeah, I think they've done a great job of harnessing what we do well and just being able to provide more resources. You know, so I think that they recognized that we were doing something pretty special with creative and data. They really didn't want to mess with that and interrupt that, and they haven't. But they've really just added, you know, resources and firepower to our existing agency, which has helped us, you know, attract a new set of clientele and also service our existing base better than we have.
It's a good pivot, because one of your claim to fame, you mentioned at the top of the show, is you put your flag in the sand when it comes to creative and just having people just think outside the box. And you've created something. You look at your website, you look at some of the case studies, you've created some phenomenally winning campaigns that have obviously engaged and resonated with a lot of end consumers and great for the brands. And, you know, and so having high quality and engaging creative obviously is a key to success. You've proven it. So maybe let's talk about, like, how do you believe a brand should go about and build their content strategy? I'm asking this question now because I'm leading down the Facebook road, because we're going down this road, and I think Facebook is the acquisition channel of choice, being, you know, actual Facebook itself or Instagram. But having great, engaging, and unique creative is an important part of that. So I'm just curious on your mindset and kind of like, what does a great content strategy look like today?
Look, so we never raised a dollar as an agency. And when we're helping the brands that we're helping, the size that they are, they didn't have a lot of money to dump into creative. So we knew we had to figure out how to get an ROI fast. And so we were very scrappy. We picked up our phones. We shot, you know, what we thought was like the best possible creative that we could possibly do with our phones. And it turns out, you know, the platform actually kind of, you know, the consumer behavior actually loves more native looking content. So we got lucky there. And then we started telling stories, right? Like, Facebook is a discovery platform. You go on there, you're looking for content that you're going to enjoy and get entertained with, or you're just trying to catch up with friends. There's no intent. At least the intent is really, really light, if there is any. So you have to create discoverable content that is ultimately going to be, you know, sort of has showmanship to it, right? Like, actually drives interest, desire, and then also purchase intent. So you have to create all of that versus, like, you know, doing like your Google search ads where you're already capitalizing on any sort of intent that's already there with somebody searching, right? I'd say, where does a brand start, right? So depending on how much they have in terms of budget, when we look at, like, when we're working with a lot of clients that we work with, what a number could look like, usually whatever you plan on spending over a quarter, take 10%. If you don't have any creative at all, it might be closer to 15% in terms of media budget, and apply that just to creative. The easiest way to do it is to go through, like, what is going on around across your competitor set and start establishing how you're going to differentiate from the rest of your competitors or people in your market. And you want to just build out, you know, what are your big value props? What are those hero products that you're going to really showcase? Get into the buyer's mentality as soon as possible. Figure out what your objections, doubts, fears are that customers might go through before they actually hit the purchase button. And you want to build stories that tell that. Given that this is a podcast, hard to be visual, but there's a lot of really interesting ways to do that. And UGC happens to be something that we lean into a lot as well. What you really need to do is spend a lot of time figuring out where is your all your creative coming from. And you have to create a creative pipeline, because we see too many times that brands are, you know, kind of relying on the same old stale assets, or they just don't put enough investment into creative, and they end up sort of running out of it. They see ad fatigue. They're not testing enough. It's really your sales pitch is your creative, and it's 80% of the equation. We know this. Facebook actually came out and told us this recently, and they're like, hey, like, you know, we really kind of factored everything. And it turns out that if you broke it up into whether it's targeting, you know, your audiences or how you media buy, 80% of the equation is your messaging and is your creative assets for most brands. In some cases, like, most of that's video, but in some cases it could also just be really engaging statics and photography as well. So, you know, we kind of went over a lot of that. Josh, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would just add, understanding your product as a brand, like, know what your key differentiators are. Facebook is the medium, but really, like, what we're doing is we're advertising and we're selling and we're in marketing. And I think the principles that applied to, you know, TV and radio in terms of, you know, appealing to a customer's desires, as Moody said, overcoming objections, all those things still apply to the creative today. The medium is just modern in terms of Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok. I think a lot of clients go in just thinking, oh, well, if I show the product in some way, they will come. But it's a really deeper understanding of, you know, how your product fits into the market. Why does someone want your product over another? So we really have, like, a formulaic approach before the creative is created to understand all these things. And I think that's what separates us apart from a lot of the other agencies. It's quite a scientific approach to creative to drive performance and results for our clients.
I love that. You know, one comment that comes up a little bit from the brands, I have a book of business and brands that I manage day to day inside Shopify. And the concept of the content treadmill comes up quite a bit. And it seems to go down the rabbit hole of, influencers or creators, brand ambassadors, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Moody, talking about the UGC component, and it's almost like very grassroots. I mean, we're kind of at, you know, at the trail end, hopefully-ish, of this pandemic, but, you know, certainly through all of 2020 and certainly for Q1 of 21, there are no big budgets going off into a studio to produce content. And for some reason, it just seems that because a lot of people are sheltered at home or in some cases being locked down, they're just kind of used to this sort of content, but they need a lot of it. And it seems like one way people are getting it is through UGC and getting it based on building relationships with these brand ambassadors or influencers. Does Mute 6 kind of consider all of that? And do they help brands think about a platform of like, how do you manage an influencer network of creators that you can then use as part of your acquisition funnel?
So if you're going to set up the channels of how you're going to get creative or, you know, create sort of a pipeline, it has to be methodically planned out. If you're like, oh, I'm just going to start working with influencers and hope I get the right content. You know, I mean, like at the end of the day, we're advertisers, right? And there's a lot of strategy behind advertising. That's what we're paid for. And you can't rely on the creators to really know that. I think like what they go for and what they're optimizing for is engagement and clout and beautiful brand sort of partnership. It doesn't mean you're going to get content that sells. And so you really have to create the creative briefs and be hands-on with the influencers to build what you want. One thing we do is we've got literally 100 people on our creative team between editors, producers, copywriters. We got so many people. And we actually send, like our clients will, we call it internal UGC package, but essentially we send product from, you know, the brands that work with us to all of these creators, and they know exactly what to do, exactly what's going to create a reaction, exactly which parts to focus on in terms of the product, exactly what to say. And a lot of them have studios, like these mini studios that they built in their homes at this point now that everyone's been remote since COVID hit. That's what you have to do, is you have to create an army of content creators within your network. So either that's people that work at your company or people who have been close to the brand, right? And you have to, you know, make sure that you're constantly getting new content coming every week so you can test those things out. The scientific approach that Josh hits on is like, if you're going to sort of formulate what is the, or look into just the numbers in terms of how to track performance, right? Because you have all these ideas you want to test, you have these hooks you want to test, you have these objections you want to hit on, right? You all this beautiful creative, but like ultimately breaking down the formula, which is the first thing is how are people reacting to the first couple of seconds of your video? We call that the thumb stop rate. We essentially measure how many people are watching for 3 seconds divided by impressions, right? Just like a click-through rate, but instead this is about people stopping in the feed and actually zoning in on your piece of creative. If it's not 30% or higher, the chances of that being a profitable piece of creative is going to be a lot tougher. That is number one. I've seen some starts as high as like 50 to 70% in terms of thumb stop rates. So just really figuring out how to optimize that with something that's shocking or in awe or just a really exciting hook of sorts that really gets, you know, either deep rooted into the problem or shows the solution, right? So that piece. And then building the rest of the message into the video of how are you solving a problem? How are you hitting on pain points? I think when we get into this type of language, everyone expects that this is going to be something that's very salesy in nature, something that you might see on As Seen on TV or an infomercial. There's plenty of beautiful ways to do this that is still on brand and still in a way that doesn't look like you're trying to peddle something on a late night infomercial, right? So you can have a lot of fun with it. And that's where the challenging part comes in. And again, using UGC, making it more native becomes really, really fun. So just measuring the drop off, testing a bunch of messages, testing your hook, and then building out a full creative pipeline of testing, you know, all of the different value props and hitting on all of the different objections and trying different sort of audiences for different personas. And it can be, you know, forever long in terms of creative testing.
I was just going to say, Moods, you know, and it, you know, to your point, I think, you know, what you said was all about a formula, which is so, so important and having that. But I also think it doesn't, you know, for the average e-com brand that may be listening, I don't think it needs to be too hard. And you can literally start by just gifting your product. You know, if you have something, you know, you could, there's lots of very effective influencer tools out there that help create the content, but also you can just DM, you know, your on Instagram, like your favorite influencers or favorite people, say, hey, like, can I send you this for content or for a post? And that can be how you can get started. If you're kind of looking at like, oh my God, this sounds like way too complex. That's how it can start. And then as you have more funding and as you grow, you know, that's when you can start to really dial up, you know, the amount of influencers, the platforms, and then the investment that you're willing to pay these people.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. You know, it's interesting too about the creative side of an e-commerce brand is that I think a lot of people are under the incorrect assumption that all creative can belong and be shared in all different mediums. And I think that's actually incorrect because I think there's nuances by social channel. Are you able to maybe expand a little bit on that? Like, am I correct to assume that just because something goes on IGTV or on a reel, can that go on an Instagram story somewhere? Or does it go on a regular kind of Facebook post through like, I think this is the problem that a lot of people have. What channels do they pick? What's hot and popular right now? And then when you have creative either made by Mute6 or grassroots themselves with their own phone, how do you figure out what pieces of content go on which particular channel and why?
The big channels in terms of driving performance are still Facebook and Instagram. You know, TikTok, we're seeing a lot of promising signs, but it's not there yet in terms of scale. Snapchat as well is okay, but I think we see more promise in TikTok. You know, having said that, if Facebook and Instagram are kind of still the main revenue drivers, that organic style content still works really, really well. You can pretty much use that on Facebook, on Instagram, Instagram stories. You know, the difference between a story post and a feed post is really just the sizing of the content. And so I think even just starting there is like super easy, low barrier to entry. And then, yeah, like, look, if you want to start running TikTok advertising, that is definitely a very different beast. And we've seen that what you run on Facebook and Instagram doesn't really flow across onto TikTok. It is its own kind of unique platform. So I think there's challenges with that. But I would say for most part, like, there are nuances, sizing, and also the priority of the information. But if you're a small to medium business, I wouldn't let that kind of get in the way of getting going. And I think the beauty of it is, like, you test and you learn and you let the data make the decisions for you. You know, the data will always indicate, like, was this an effective decision? Did this creative flow across platform? Oh no, it worked on Instagram. It didn't work on Facebook. Let's try to come up with some understandings on why that happened.
Yeah. So having a mindset of experimentation is key.
Yeah. And I'd say the biggest opportunity isn't necessarily like, okay, Facebook and Instagram, still the heroes, still where you should be investing most of your dollars, especially if you're like, you know, smaller and like you, yes, you can cap out on Facebook, right? Like after spending, you know, you can go from zero to $100,000 pretty quickly, but getting to like 300, 400, 500 is like where you kind of sustain. And then it's not very often brands are getting above that to a million plus on Facebook. So if you're not like doing that kind of numbers, like really just invest in the platform, invest in creative and figure it out. I actually think there's a bigger opportunity in just optimizing like just glamorizing the small buying behavior moments and capturing footage and creative based off of that. And what do I mean by that? So like, for example, we were just advising a brand who sells sunglasses and I'm looking at all their statics and their banners. And, you know, it's funny, like if you're selling sunglasses, you don't necessarily need too much video creative, like the right statics could do it for you, but you have to put yourself in the, you know, imagine you're in a sunglass hut, you're picking up sunglasses for the first time and you're looking at them, you put them on, you look in the mirror, you look to the right, you look to the left, you look up, down. There's so many brands that don't think about this. It's like, what is this sort of sequence of thoughts you have when you're investigating buying a product for the first time? And how do you capture that those moments from a creative standpoint so you get all of those angles, they're close up, and it's almost like digitally, yes, I'm looking at my phone, but if I was in real if I was a real person buying this product right now, I would have the exact same angles. And in this case, the sunglasses were too far, the shots were too far. It was, you know, they were using influencers, and it was more about like the whole full look of the influencer rather than up close and personal to the frames and all those tiny details. And I really think that's happening now. I mean, we advise so many brands, right? So we get lots of brands coming in and are like, well, you're creative. They don't really think about this kind of thing. And this is the stuff we have to really shoot for. Another one was a supplement company. And so we kind of glamorize the moments where you're just mixing the supplement on a nice counter and you're watching it dissolve, right? Like that's, you got to find those little moments where you're like really find satisfaction as a consumer trying out the product for the first time. And it could literally be applied to any brand, any product. And if you can really absorb and capture those shots and make them part of your creative and advertising strategy, you're going to get a lot further as well. So still lots of opportunity to optimize creative in my eyes.
I'm going to pivot a bit over to what's going on with Apple right now. And I think you have you've produced some great content, and there's been a lot of things shared around the web about what this iOS 14 update is, what it means to advertisers. I've heard some grumblings a little bit that, you know, the Facebook Pixel is not as great as it used to be anymore. CAC is increasing, and they're just finding overall net, it's causing them lots of heartache a little bit right now. So are you able to kind of dig into that? I'd also would love to hear your feedback either or about what's been going on with Facebook, their interface, and any kind of numbers and KPIs and things around their new interface and what that means for marketers. So Apple on one side, iOS 14, the other side is the Facebook interface and things like that.
My take, and I think the agency's take so far, is really we haven't seen much of a decline. Like, we haven't seen the horror stories that we all kind of expected. We, again, like Moody mentioned, we have 400 Shopify clients, and I think there have been some challenges, you know, just to get technical quickly, but there have been, you know, rises in competition based on more competition and less audience size. But I think all in all, right now, there's no alarm bells ringing. I think it was definitely beat up. There's a lot of agencies talking about it, and that may come. And Facebook are certainly saying that it will progress over time. And the more people that update their software, the technically the less signal that they have. So there is a chance that it gets worse. But I will say that I don't think we've seen a massive decline in any particular vertical or anything that causes us for a concern. We also have, you know, a ton of strategies to help mitigate the effects of iOS 14 and in the way that we run the media. If you think about what iOS 14, it's essentially a reduction in signal from that Facebook is going to get from each individual user. But there are certain audiences there that are unaffected. And so we're looking to spend more money in the areas where Facebook has full data capabilities. And then also we are, you know, our point of difference is creative. And so, you know, the creative visual is unchanged, you know, so maybe there's a targeting implication to that. But we found that if you can still create that compelling creative experience, you're going to win. And I think it probably puts more emphasis on that now to the advertisers out there, the clients out there that are not doing good creative, and they've got this impediment that is meant to be iOS 14. We look to see that we've got a bigger advantage over those type of clients.
Yeah, I think the other part of that is you really want to get intimate with your numbers. One thing that we don't see a lot of brands doing and that we built out literally a data team for is get into the attribution modeling, get into really understanding like, what is your actual marketing expense as a percentage of top line? Let's say your marketing expense is line item for 30% max, right? So really understand how you're diversifying your media mix and how that's playing to the actual allocation you have in terms of budget every month, and then what you're actually getting. Because look, at the end of the day, platform numbers, whether they're not, maybe they're not necessarily going away or doesn't feel like it, but eventually, you know, everything's going in this direction. So, you know, it's kind of, you got to get closer to how it plays into your media mix overall, and then trust your marketing mix as much as possible from a platform number standpoint. And then, you know, diversify as much as possible as well, so that way you're not too reliant on each platform. And so the more data modeling that you do, we've got a whole data science team that now does this for us and our clients. the more you're getting into the attribution side, there's a few different platforms that we use for this as well. Attribution app, you know, Rockerbox, Peel Insights. These are all really great. Peel Insights is a free tool. I think they have like a free trial. You can plug in and it'll give you a lot of understanding across that. And then also give you a ton of cohort and LTV analysis as well, which is really fun to get into. But you got to learn the data side of this and start to sort of move off of the platform in terms of how you're making your decisions. You'll also start to notice that there are patterns in how much you spent and how much revenue you drew and how much the platform actually reported on, right? Because like a lot of things happened this year. It wasn't just iOS 14, but our attribution window dropped from 28 days to 7, right? So there's a ton of data we're not actually getting. So you can't really compare apples to apples, last year's data versus this year's data. Mind you, COVID-19 and all of the consumer behavior that's changed is sort of massive. So like consumer behavior's changed, tracking's changing. At the end of the day, get closer to your back end numbers and what you're investing into each channel and how you're doing it. Those would be the way you measure going forward as all of this, you know, continues to happen.
This is a great episode because I'm learning a lot, and I'm on the front lines with a lot of like major brands in the hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, as their trusted advisor. And there's a lot of things that you just always got to be learning. It's just a life of learning and iterating. And so I just really, really appreciate you sharing that because I think that's what I kind of wanted to hear. What about the Facebook side? I understand there's been some changes. I don't know if you can share what's happened with Facebook as of late with their new interface and some, you know, any other nuances that you'd like to share.
I don't think there's been too many changes from a platform perspective. I mean, they're making adjustments to their interface all the time. And I think the biggest one was just the in relation to iOS 14. So nothing really to take note.
So let's talk a little bit about scale, because I think there's a lot of, I would say, Shopify Plus CEOs, a lot of marketing directors, director of marketing, lots of people listen to the show and they like to be inspired about like what's next. And from your perspective, like you deal with a lot of big brands, you have hundreds of Shopify brands that are using the Mute 6 services. So let's talk about, you know, where are these big brands diversifying their ad spend today? If you can get into, you talked a little bit about connected television and programmatic and things, but I just would love to hear from your perspective, like what's hot right now and why are people diversifying their ad spend?
So I still think that, you know, it's funny, right? Like TV advertising, you see, you know, you go on TV, you watch H&R Block commercial, you watch Progressive Insurance, right? But then you see a DTC brand commercial and you're like, wow, they finally made it. They're on they're on TV. Wow. It's still a novel experience to see a DTC brand on TV. And you're just like, wow, that's cool. Connected TV offers a lot of tracking capabilities that, you know, linear TV or, you know, traditional TV doesn't. We see a lot of brands go in that direction. TV is still super powerful, still big part of advertising spend in general, and isn't something that should be discounted. A TV commercial still works. It's really just tracking that becomes difficult, that honestly D2C brands are just not used to. They're just like, but I don't get to see like actual, like what? Like, I don't know, you know what I mean? Especially on the connected TV format, you don't get the spike analysis that TV gets you, at least, where you're tracking like the impact of what happened 15 seconds after that TV commercial ran is how you do that, right? So, but those are good places to go. Podcasts is a phenomenal channel. Where else can you go and get like a host read? I mean, you have advertisers on your podcast. Where else can you go and get like actual somebody reading? Like, obviously it doesn't work for every brand. Actually, funny, I actually put brands into two buckets. They're either demonstrable products that solve problems or they're branded commodities. So think of apparel, which is like really just a branded a commodity versus like, now things are obviously more functional and things like that, but still, versus like a Theragun, which is like percussive therapy and is designed to like release all of your knots and things like that. So, you know, I think podcast makes a lot of sense for demonstrable products and is a place where you can go and you can see a return. And so we're doing and testing and trying that out. You can also do programmatic radio inserts, which is kind of fun. But again, I think the host read, like traditional podcast advertising, is a place where you see massive budgets similar to those that you might apply to social. And then influencer marketing is still so is becoming more and more powerful. Tracking is developing in it. And on top of that, like, it's so different than it was 5 years ago. Like, there's all these up and coming influencers or niche influencers that are only have 15 or 20,000 followers. But because maybe like your product is really understanding what those niches are, you can go after those influencers. Like, I'm just thinking of like a shoe brand that makes like essentially shoes for nurses, and they go and they can go and they and be really impactful by working with influencers who are doctors and nurses and surgeons who only have 20,000 brands, but they're so influential and they have so much engagement that their followers truly like go anywhere they go. And the return on ad spend on those influencers is super significant. So I think paid influencer is still a massive place to go. And it's less, it's not like working with the macros is the ticket anymore. No, that's not, because those guys don't have big followings and they can't really command, you know, their following to kind of move in a direction the way some of the micro influencers can. And on top of that, they're always changing. There's influencers that'll pop up on the scene and only have like 6 months worth of like followers that are really recent, right? So knowing that, you'll get a lot more bang for your buck because, you know, there's their follower count or the followers are still engaged and would still follow their opinion. And that could be against any platform. That could be YouTube, Instagram. You're seeing it with TikTok. TikTok's an interesting place for that as well. But yeah, I think in terms of like what the big brands are doing is you're running tests in all of these different channels and you're trying to execute and hope for the best. A big thing is you have to accept that tracking isn't going to be the same as your Facebook or Instagram, where you get really great visibility in terms of what's happening. So you have to take it with a grain of salt, and then you have to just accept that maybe you get 30 or 40% visibility in terms of what's actually happening on a bottom line standpoint. And again, that's why it's important to look at your numbers as a whole as part of your media mix and how you invest in these channels and how it changes and fluctuates, you know, the traffic that you're getting and actually what's happening throughout the funnel as you engage in these different channels.
One thing I might add too, and I might get Josh to jump in on this one, but Amazon Prime Day, I think recently was announced that it's going to be on June 21st and 22nd. So as of this recording today, we're looking at, you know, 2 to 3 weeks from right now. And so that's interesting. And so is there any recommendation for those that currently are selling on Amazon or want to sell on Amazon? You better hurry up because you got to get your stuff to FBA. But then how do you advertise other than Amazon ads and doing and getting into that engine for discovery? Is there ways of externally, is there a mindset or a proper strategy around how do I drive traffic from Facebook and Instagram over to Amazon Prime to go along with this 2-day hype?
Yeah, great question. I mean, Amazon Prime Day is a massive, you know, day on the retail calendar. Opportunity, you know, if you think about what is Prime Day, it's intent, it's eyeballs, it's activity. And I think we try to encourage our clients to piggyback on that. Like, I would say most of our clients, you know, aren't necessarily heavily on the Amazon side because they have a Shopify store. But if you don't have an Amazon store, you should be promoting heavily on your own e-commerce site to take advantage of that intent. You know, think about someone that is getting a deal on Amazon. They're clearly online. They're in the purchasing mindset. If you can interrupt that, like from a Facebook standpoint, you know, maybe they're on Amazon, they jump onto their phone and they hit Instagram and Facebook. If you have a deal that's attractive to them, you can catch them in that, you know, in that consumer mindset. So our recommendation is definitely to have a strategy on for the e-commerce only and the direct to consumer Shopify stores to have a strategy, have a discount ready to compete. And then if you're on Amazon, I mean, our Amazon side of our business is absolutely crushing it and blowing up. There is so much opportunity in the Amazon marketplace itself. And if you just look at Amazon's numbers and the way that their advertising business is expanding, our like differentiator is really incorporating the creative side of it. There are so much more visual elements on Amazon than there was, you know, even 12 to 24 months ago. And so we're finding that, you know, putting the expertise that we've learned around, you know, advertising, around consumer behavior, and actually applying that to Amazon advertising in the way that the creative is visualized and then also the way that the pages are developed is a big opportunity. So for those brands that are on Amazon really need to have an advertising plan, and those that are not, you know, should compete through Facebook and Instagram.
Let's pivot over now into some results. I think it's always motivational when you can hear direct case studies of like, hey, X brand over here could be in the same vertical. Those listening today did this, and here's the kind of success they got out of it. More for inspirational purposes, and saying, yeah, it is possible in this highly competitive world to have a direct-to-consumer brand that crushes it. There's ways of doing that and finding market fit. But a lot of it comes down to things that you've talked about, thinking about the multi-channel, thinking about the creative, thinking, having this testing mindset, knowing your numbers, understanding attribution. There's lots of stuff going on here. I'd probably flip this back over to Moody, but is there any notable brand, any public case studies that you just want to share with the listeners today?
I've been working with this brand called Bev, drinkbev.com. It's a zero sugar wine in a can, and they're expanding massively. And I luckily had the pleasure to start working with them literally like the month after COVID hit. So it's been about a year and a couple of months. You know, they were in brick and mortar. They were in, you know, a lot of the local shops, Targets, things like that in California, along with any of the liquor stores in LA. You can find them there. But they weren't online. And we literally went online and we're like, we don't know how this is really going to go. But we were a big part of the partnership and still are. We did all of the creative. So like you can go and actually check out a lot of the creative on Facebook if you want. You can just check out their library and things like that. But you'll see a mix of UGC. You'll see a bunch of really like awesome just, you know, art directed shoots. You'll see a really big focus on pour shots. I was like, hey, like I got to pour this into a nice glass. And they're like, no, we want to drink it out of the can. I was like, well, I know, but people need to see the texture. They need to see the color. They need to really understand the fizz that's happening. Like we're not getting that without doing some pour shots. So now you'll see a lot of pour shots, and that kind of really helped us turn a corner in terms of selling the liquid. But we've had a lot of fun. We've expanded into pretty much every channel, podcast, you know, we're doing some TV. We just shot this amazing hero video, which I like to call a founder story. But essentially we're getting the founder Leeks to do like kind of a walk and talk and talk about her brand, but also like showcase and do some pour shots and give a little bit of a story of like where she came from. She's got a really amazing story, incredible woman, Leeks. So it's been really fun to be part of that and watch that one grow. And they're literally doing records every month. So it's been really exciting. And they just, I don't know if you want to do some searches, but they just raised a bunch of money and they're expanding nationwide brick and mortar as well. So attacking both fronts equally hard.
Very cool. This is very cool. Thanks so much for sharing that. I'll have all those links in the show notes for those. You can come and take a look at the kind of a current case study of a live brand just to see what Mute 6 is up to. So let's talk about the future for Mute 6. I mean, you know, we're kind of, you know, hopefully getting into post-pandemic times, acquisitions, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, things are the same but different. And I think that's interesting. So are you able to talk about maybe what the North Star is, I guess, for the remainder of 21? Just how is Mute 6 going to iterate, or just partner alignment? Just end of the day, there's going to be, you know, you're dealing with 300 or 400 brands today. How do you add another 300 or 400 brands? I mean, today's show is not going to do that, but you're going to find a couple new customers, and there have been people listening today that are going, hey, I love the creative concepts and kind of just, and the thought leadership that goes into what Mute 6 is all about. I appreciate that. I believe I might want to work with them. I want to make sure that they realize what you can do today is fantastic, but then like, how are you going to continue to offer value and assistance moving forward?
First off, so there's a couple of tricks to growing an agency this big. One, we're super, super flat. We only promote from within. We don't hire from within. That doesn't make any sense. But we definitely only promote from within, and we only let people lead teams once they've gone through our full training process. We literally have training every day for every channel, and it's wild. So there's that. There's a couple other tricks. You know, I know my competitors are listening. Because, like, I mean, ultimately, I never wanted to grow at the expense of the quality of work that we're able to deliver. It's really kind of great. I think, like, also for the younger marketers who are listening, we're always hiring. You know, if you want to find a job, you know, Mute 6/careers, I believe, But, you know, it's a great place where people can come in, get really deep hands-on experience in for D2C brands, which I think like 5 to 10 years from now, you know, everyone who works at Mute 6, they're literally going to be like digital CMOs for every single brand out there, especially the D2C ones. But, you know, any brand that's listening to us now, like happily look at, you know, under the hood and do a full audit. We can look at your creative. We can, you know, really just have a lot of fun dissecting where there's possible opportunity, where you might be able to go to next, what makes sense. You just have to go to the website and fill out a form at mute6.com. And, you know, we're happy to look at it. Josh and I are very much in audits day to day. And we're, you know, we're the ones like actually talking to the brands who are considering us, right? Like, you're not going to get like a heavy sales pitch here. You're going to get actual detailed, good quality strategies and insights on how brands can really expand. And that's how it's been.
Wicked. I'm going to make sure in the show notes, I'll have ecommercefastlane.com/mute6. That's going to redirect to, I guess, your landing page on the free marketing audit for all your ad accounts and just overall, just what sort of things you're recommending. It's a pitch-free zone. It's just literally here to help and just offer value. And I really appreciate that. I've sent customers your way in the very recent past just to kind of have a look and saying, hey, they're doing a lot of things in-house. Can you take over one channel to help them? It kind of dips their toe in the pool, so to speak. And then you do other things too. Yes, you're having some organic traffic problems. Oh, okay. Well, I believe we can help you with our content side of our business. And so I think there's a lot of things you can do, and I really appreciate that. I'm also going to add is that you have a really amazing insight link called Data6, and it's at scale.mute6.com/data6. It's so interesting. Can you just tell us quickly what is going on here when you click on that link and it goes this really neat landing page with all these market trends? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, we just wanted to put it out there that, you know, we have a lot of insight, so why not help? I mean, we really did this early on when COVID hit. You know, it was scary. It was really scary. Knew what was going to happen. Nobody knew that e-commerce was going to boom. You know, some industries flourished, some industries kind of went away, or verticals, like for at least a short term of time. And we wanted to just give insight and transparency so people could feel good and make, you know, better decisions on what to do with their business. We went through a lot, we learned a lot, but now it's just a dashboard where people can get a little bit of insight across different verticals and things like that in terms of what's happening across both buying behavior, you know, advertising costs, things like that.
It's really neat. I'll link that up in the show notes. Really neat little visualization of like by vertical and all different areas. Really, the KPIs is some good business learnings about what's happening right now based on data you have. So it's really cool. Well, gentlemen, thank you. This is pretty rare for me to do a co-hosted-ish interview, but I do really appreciate both of you guys coming on today. I know we shuffled calendars for a while-ish until we finally got today to committed today. And or Pink Slip was coming to me, I believe. So thank you for both being here. It just, you guys both know this, but you know, Shopify really has a mission to make commerce better for everyone. And it's, to me, it seems very clear that Mute6 really also is in tight alignment, really with wanting to help Shopify brands in a lot of areas. I completely understand what you guys do. And I think you've shared a lot today, just this growing this revenue and building lifetime value. It really is because of creative, finding the right channels, testing, and you know, the multi-channel side. I think it's fantastic. It just, thank you guys both for coming on the show and giving back to the Shopify ecosystem.
Happy to come.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you much. Have yourself a great afternoon, and we'll definitely be chatting in the future.
Cheers, Steve. Have a great day.
Great.
Today's episode is brought to you by Vicely, a flexible personalization and search solution for your Shopify business. Hundreds of Shopify brands use Vicely to grow their businesses, convert store visitors into happy, loyal customers with highly relevant product touchpoints throughout the customer's initial and repeat journeys. With seamless Shopify integration, one-to-one personalization, A/B testing, over 20 pre-built and custom widgets, predictive search, dynamic filters, merchandising, I mean, literally everything you need, best-in-class support, it does it all. Vicely is the perfect solution for efficient e-commerce teams that are focusing on growing the business and not their workload. So start today and find out how Vicely can help accelerate the growth of your Shopify business. Visit Vicely.io or search for Vicely in the Shopify App Store to begin your 14-day free trial. No credit card required. Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you personally for being a loyal listener of eCommerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company powered by Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.